Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now, how ICE in the age of Trump is working. Late last month, an official from the Trump administration admitted to a Senate committee that the Health and Human Services Department has lost track of nearly 1,500 migrant children that it placed with sponsors. The children were taken into U.S. government's care after they arrived at the U.S. border alone. Meanwhile, the acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement will retire at the end of this month. When the new director arrives, how will he see the mission of the agency? And how is that mission transformed in an administration that has prioritized legal immigration? Today, a discussion with a guest who ran ICE for a brief tenure about the effectiveness of its policies at the borders and in American cities. And as we start, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Do you think the increased deportations and increased enforcement on farms and businesses indicates that ICE has its priorities straight? And what do you think about some of the police and sheriff's departments who believe ICE damages their relationships with their communities? So I'd like to know what you think as this discussion develops about ICE's priorities and some of the policies that they're carrying out and your view overall of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. John Sandwig is with us. He's an attorney and former director of ICE, and he joins us today from Washington, D.C. And John, welcome. It's really good to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Carrie.
Linus Chan joins us as well. He's an associate clinical professor of law at the University of Minnesota, joining us by phone. Linus, welcome to you. Really good to have you on the show as well.
Thank you for having me.
John, you spent about 5 months running ICE in 2014. I wonder if the agency today appears to you to have some markedly different priorities than it did when you were running it.
Yeah, Carrie, I mean, obviously it does. Actually, I spent 7 months at ICE, but 5 years at DHS working on immigration policy. But certainly, listen, there's dramatic change here. Under the Obama administration, our key focus was on shifting the ICE's resources to focus on public safety threats. You have to remember that ICE can only remove about 200,000 people a year. You have 11.5 million undocumented immigrants. The way I see it, Carrie, is no matter what your views are on undocumented immigration in the United States, whether you think all 11.5 million should leave or you think there should be a path to citizenship for those 11.5 million, I think everybody could agree that if you can only deport 200,000, make sure you get the worst first, right? Get the folks who are committing crimes and are public safety threats off the streets first. And that was our approach. It took a while to get the policies right. It took a while to get the tactics to marry up with the policies. But the entire philosophy was focus on the bad guys.
You know, John, as I hear you describe what the philosophy was, though, it makes me curious about whether the mission of the organization, of the agency, is really that open to interpretation. I mean, laws are guiding the way that agency is going to be run, isn't it? But I hear you saying a guiding philosophy will change the way ICE operates. Is that right?
Yeah, no, and you raise a good point, Carrie, and that's certainly a point that during the Obama administration, and I had plenty of personal interactions with folks like, you know, Senator Sessions and his staff and others would criticize us for. Their position was, hey, you're not actually enforcing the immigration laws. Your job is to arrest everybody who's in the country unlawfully. But, you know, I think what we're drawing on is a tradition within law enforcement, and it's a tradition that is not controversial in any other law enforcement context but for immigration, which is that you exercise basic discretion to, you know, to best promote your policy goals, right, or best promote your mission.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly ICE is a public safety organization, and the reality is that if you can only get 200,000, you're going to exercise discretion on those people who pose no threat. So if you've been living here 10 years, you have U.S. citizen children, you've never committed a crime, I mean, who do you want us to deport, recognizing we can only deport one? That person or the person who's been convicted of multiple felonies? But you're right. I think there are some who say, well, discretion is inappropriate in the immigration context. But that's certainly a point I strongly disagree with.
Yeah, Linus, I'm interested in your view now. Is what we're seeing just a change of philosophy and discretion in the way the agency is carrying out its brief? How do you interpret it?
Well, I think that there is absolutely a change in policy and discretion. But I think it goes more than that. I think there is much more of a broader view of the agency's mission, and it's part and parcel with the administration's view, not just of immigration in terms of controlling and figuring out what to do with people who are undocumented. I think a lot of this, as you can see, has really shifted towards injecting fear and injecting a lot of deliberate harm in order to create an extremely hostile environment. And it is not just as a policy to control or decide the fate of people who are undocumented, but really, as you can see from a lot of what has been happening on the administration level outside of removal, is in fact to control legal immigration. I think there is a lot, you know, I used to make statements, you know, a few years ago when I used to debate people and have conversations, and I would say that, you know, everyone this has the same problem with the same two words, which is illegal immigration. Mm-hmm. And the people who are on, you know, the immigration advocate side, we would argue that it should not be illegal, that we need to find better ways to have methods and processes to allow people to migrate into the United States, because we were clearly benefiting from that migration, and we were clearly doing so in a way that the processes that were in place were ripe for abuse.
Okay, you've said something interesting there, and I want to go back to John on this. Linus described this as an effort to create a hostile environment, and I think he was saying that that affects legal immigration as well as illegal immigration. John, you know that there will be many Americans who believe that if you create a hostile environment for illegal immigration, fewer people will come to the border and try to get over the border illegally, and they won't be breaking the law. And many Americans are okay with that. What is wrong with creating the kind of environment that discourages people from breaking the law to get into the border from someone who headed up ICE?
You know, Carrie, to be honest with you, there have been multiple attempts to create deterrence at people coming up to this country, and in my opinion, all of them have failed. What you see right now at the border is large numbers of Central Americans coming north through Mexico and then claiming asylum in the United States. The thing of it is, though, is those people are leaving conditions that are so horrific, and they're enduring a journey that is so dangerous, and they're spending every dime they have on smuggling organizations to bring them up to that border, that in my experience, nothing we do on the United States side is going to deter them from continuing to come.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity and the chance, no matter how remote it is, to get safe haven in the United States for themselves and their families is so alluring that we just can't prevent them. And I do think, Carrie, you know, in my experience and spending a ton of time working on border policy issues, and you know, there are a lot of folks in the agency who think if we could just get some more deterrence, we'll stop people from coming up to this country. And I've seen lots of efforts, including the Obama administration. You know, we detained families hoping that detention would somehow deter them from coming.
Right.
None of it works. And I just think all too often we look at things like as if we as the United States control everything that's going on in the world, when there are a lot of push factors that were driving those people north that very little that we did could stop.
I think this is a really good question to turn to our listeners for here. Sheila says, I feel it's unfair to treat people badly that we've allowed into our country, whom have lived here for a long time. We shouldn't separate them from their children or return them to their original country. I also feel rules should not be broken. Draw a new line and hold it. If you're listening into our conversation for this part of the hour, John Sandwig is with us. He's an attorney, and he's the former director of ICE Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And Linus Chan is with us. He's an associate clinical professor of law at the University of Minnesota. We're examining how the mission, the core mission, the brief of ICE has changed under the Trump administration, and how Americans, average Americans, feel about the policies that are being carried out. But what John Sandwig just said is interesting for for discussion here. Do you still, as an American voter, believe that deterrent is the answer to discouraging more people from coming mostly north, although I'm very aware that people overstay their visas and come in from Canada and other ways? But do you think deterrent is effective and should be enhanced to discourage more people from trying to get into the country illegally? What's your thought on that? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Linus, I want to address that with you, this idea that I think a lot of people, when they think about illegal immigration, they think about people coming over the southern border illegally. But we should talk about people who overstay their visas. That's a big chunk of it, isn't it?
It's actually the majority of people who are considered undocumented. The numbers have shifted in the most recent years because migration crossings have been, for a little while now, close to zero, some zero, meaning that there are, the number of people coming are equal to or less than the people who are leaving when you're talking about just border crossing on the southern border. Most of the people that are here undocumented, I think the majority now, are people who have overstayed their visas. And this is an important point because the people who overstay, a lot of the refrain that we've heard is people who are undocumented have somehow are criminals. Well, mm-hmm. The people who overstay their visas have not committed any sort of crime. They have committed a civil violation. Huh. This is not the same as people when they do cross. There's a federal misdemeanor statute that does allow for that prosecution. But I really wanted to touch one more thing about this idea of deterrence.
Yeah.
And this idea of hostility. It is not costless. What I mean by that is it's not just extraordinarily expensive when it comes to money and resources. It is costing people in our own communities. When we say that we're going to make a group of people very uncomfortable, and it is not always easy to identify those groups of people and who they are, what we're really saying is we are going to exact costs from people that we suspect have those people in the communities. And what that means is U.S. citizens. It means U.S. citizen children whose family members who might be targeted. It means U.S. citizens who've been in the communities for decades, but simply might not look white enough for other people in the agency to determine whether or not they are in fact undocumented or not. There was a very well-publicized report in Colorado where ICE agents were questioning people at a restaurant simply because they were speaking Spanish. Now, the question is that the kind of costs we are really willing to pay in order for a deterrent type of methodology? And Mr. Sandwick had mentioned that it's been tried for a long time. It's been tried for at least 30 to 40 years. And the level of deterrence keeps going higher and higher, and then it is not being directly affected on what we can do when it comes to undocumented immigration.
Bruce says on Twitter, I think that the choice of immigrant instead of refugee changes the debate in a way that permits the current application of illegal to the people trying to escape bad conditions. Why don't we categorize them as refugees and change the discussion? John, I know that's been a part of the immigration debate for some time. Where do you come down on it?
Well, you know what's interesting, and Carrie, and what Linus kind of suggested is 100% accurate, is that, frankly, we don't have a growing undocumented immigration problem in this country. Net migration, the population of undocumented immigrants has been flat, if not declining,
yes,
since 2009.
I don't know why people don't believe that, but we say that at every discussion.
Certainly the administration's goal is to kind of create an impression that there's chaos at the border, right?
And
I think that achieves, I think the president feels like that helps him with his political goals. Certainly it helps him getting building the case for the wall. But the reality is the border's never been more secure. All the data indicates that the undocumented population is not growing and has been declining since 2009. And all the data shows that, 86% of the 11.5 million undocumented immigrants in the United States, so 86% of them have now lived here since 2006. So it's not, you know, the kind of, you know, image he wants, the president wants to create of chaos at the border and criminal rogue, you know, massive populations of convicted criminals running around really just isn't borne out by any of the data. So I think, you know, that's one of the unfortunate things in immigration and in my experience just working with, you know, upon Capitol Hill and trying to get legislation passed is there's just all this confusion about what really is going on in our immigration system and who these people are.
Well,
and I don't think it's the public, it's a fair, you know, it's fair to the public to mislead them to suggest that somehow there's an enforcement solution. I believe in immigration enforcement. I believe in secure borders. But there's no way to deport 11.5 million people.
John, I will say this. I hear you on that. And I know the rhetoric from the top matters. But there's a lot of information, a lot of reporting out there about that exposes just what you've said. It isn't chaotic. You know, net migration is down. I think the information is out there, but I also know that it's powerful when it's coming from the president who is suggesting that, you know, there is chaos and lawlessness there. You mentioned the wall, and I wanted to ask you both something about this. The current director of ICE, Thomas Homan, who's retiring on June 30th, thinks the president's idea of a wall is an effective one. And at the beginning of the year, he was on National Public Radio, and he said that there is evidence that walls work to deter or repel illegal immigration. And I want to play a bit of what he said.
There's going to be places, it's going to be a wall. It's going to be places where it's going to be electronics. Like, you can't put a wall in the middle of Rio Grande. So I'm just speaking from my own experience. Every place they have built a wall or a barrier, it has worked. 100% of the time, illegal migration has decreased wherever there's a barrier put.
Linus, is there any evidence to support that?
I am not aware of any reliable studies that have looked at whether walls look. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to seem too dismissive, but there already has been a wall. Like, this idea that there are no walls, that there is, like, that if you go to the southern border, there is not a wall. If I encourage people to actually look, there is some really moving images of families in the border in California, where families will literally, you know, meet on both sides of the wall, one family on the other side, family members who've been separated by their loved ones, in order to at least have some physical presence near them. So the idea that there is no wall, that's ridiculous. The idea that we're really going to require more wall is going to be more effective. The only thing I'll say is it's unlikely, even if it is effective, which I doubt, mm-hmm. It's unlikely to be an efficient use of resources. I mean, I think every single reliable commentator during the campaign was, even people who supported President Trump, were saying, well, he doesn't really mean an actual wall. And I think the reason why is because if you would sit down and think about it, the amount of resources that it would take to build that would be astronomical, and not necessarily the most efficient way to decrease what Mr. Sandwig and I keep mentioning is the actual problem is already in many ways going down. And a wall might just, I mean, it has a huge number of costs, not just financially, but culturally, and of course, environmentally. So, I mean, it's just not, even if it were effective, it would seem to be something that would cost way too much in many, many ways.
John, I do hear Thomas Homan there acknowledging what Linus is saying, that it wouldn't be the traditional wall kind of structure. Did you see any evidence, though, that any kind of barrier, no matter what form you call it, and you call it a wall, works to stop people from coming in?
No, well, listen, barriers definitely work. And there are certain areas along the border where you absolutely have to have them. You know, in the early 90s, the border between San Diego and Tijuana would be overrun with people just streaming across the border. You'd have groups, the smugglers would organize everybody to get together and then kind of make a mass attempt, you know, efforts across the border. It was an incredibly dangerous and chaotic situation. So there you have triple layer fencing. Maybe it's not a wall per se, but it's 10, 12, 15 foot high, three layers of barbed wire fencing. It's very intimidating and incredibly effective in preventing that from happening. But I think Linus is 100% right. Look, what the wall that's being contemplated and discussed is a tremendous waste of money. We're talking about building a giant wall in parts of, let's say, New Mexico that have had one border crossing over the last 50 years.
Wow.
There are certain areas where it makes sense to have a physical barrier, like the Tijuana-San Diego border, for example. But that the barrier was built years ago under the Bush administration, frankly, under the Clinton administration, and some of it even under the Obama administration. So when you're looking at $3 million a mile, there are so many more effective uses. I mean, candidly, Kerry, if I'm Trump, if I'm advising Trump, and he's saying to me, how do I get more of these people out of the country? I say, let's just take the money it would take for 20 miles of that wall and hire immigration judges.
Oh,
immigration judges are the crux of everything that drives President Trump nuts, whether it's asylum seekers or the slow pace of deportations. It's all because of backlogs in the immigration courts. And for the amount of money you're spending on just 20 miles of that wall, you could probably double the size of the immigration courts, which would increase dramatically the number of deportations and, frankly, deal with the Central American crisis much more efficiently.
Call here from Al in Eden Prairie. Good morning, Al. Hi.
Good morning. One of your comments a little while ago got me thinking about the enforcement side of things.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you could help me understand I read somewhere not too long ago that the revised estimate of the number of people here illegally is in the low 20 million number up to potentially. I'm not sure what the total number of Hispanic and based people are in the country. I think it's around 40 million or so. So it sounds like potentially 50% or every other person that you see, and correct me if I'm wrong, but every other person you see could potentially be here illegally. And if that's true, that's got to make for a really interesting situation in law enforcement if you're looking at a flip of the coin if the person's here illegally or not.
Al, this might help. According to the Pew Research Center, Mexicans may no longer be the majority of U.S. unauthorized immigrants. They made up half of all unauthorized immigrants in 2016, 5.6 million Mexican unauthorized immigrants living in the U.S. in 2015 and 2016. Down from 6.4 million in 2009. But John and Linus, you hear what Al is asking. And I think this goes back to the way maybe those ICE officers were behaving in Colorado. John, how would you answer that?
Well, the listener's not wrong in the sense of, first of all, I would say that quickly, though, Kerry, that I think all estimates I've always seen are about 11.5 million for the total undocumented population. But you're not wrong in the sense that if you're an ICE agent, in terms of how who do you arrest? It is a little bit like shooting fish in a barrel. There are so many individuals undocumented in this country that it's very easy for ICE to burn all of its resources in terms of arresting individuals. And frankly, that's why we had our whole strategy under the Obama administration saying, hey, let's just ignore the people who've been here 10 years. Let's ignore the people with the U.S. citizen kids. Ignore the people who aren't committing crimes because it's a waste of our time. The criminality rates in the immigrant communities are below that of non-immigrant communities, which I fully agree with. I will tell you, though, that there are plenty of criminals that ICE can burn every single dollar Congress has given it, and there'd still be more criminals out there. And so that was the whole philosophy. There are just so many people out here who are undocumented. We can't possibly get them all. Let's get the bad ones.
So can I just address that real quick?
Yeah, Linus,
please.
I
want to address also Bruce's earlier comment. But I want to just say a couple of things. There is this conflagration between people who are undocumented and race, right? I mean, I think this caller first started with the idea of trying to say, like, look, I've heard that there are perhaps 20 million undocumented people. Now, that number, I think Mr. Sandwick is absolutely right, is about twice too big, right? It's quite a bit larger than any reliable estimates have seen it. But then equates that number and then looking at the number of Latinos in the country and then has said, look, if that's the case, then that means every one in every two Latinos that I see might be undocumented. But that's just not – that's in many, many ways, or several different layers, that's completely inaccurate. And that what that does, though, is it places a lot of emphasis on race when it comes to immigration enforcement. And, what has happened in this country is, and there is a cost to this type of immigration enforcement. And part of that cost, whether we like to admit it or not, is that it requires surveilling everyone, including U.S. citizens. The databases that the government is using in order to track people who are non-citizens and people who are citizens is enormous. And the way that it happens in the last 10 to 15 years is precisely because of a lot of ideas that there is no reliable way to figure out whether someone is a citizen or not. And what you still have, and the question is, if we want to either go through a completely surveillance state, or do we want to continue to rely on what is inaccurate and prejudicial to many of our communities, which is a very racial view of immigration enforcement? Now, I wanted to address Bruce's quick statement about refugees versus immigrants.
Yeah.
All I will say is I would have agreed with your caller that I thought that casting the question of are we going to be welcoming to refugees or not would have helped a lot in this debate. And unfortunately, what I've seen in the last couple of years to say is it doesn't seem to work. Talking about people who are refugees and people who are clearly fleeing violence, persecution, torture, and death, at least for this administration, hasn't really convinced them that we should at least not be so draconian as to deliberately separate women and their children. I mean, if you have an administration that can see that view, say, acknowledge that they are asylum seekers, acknowledge that they come from places of extreme violence and poverty, and still say, you know what, we're going to continue to try to deter them by separating them from their children, it makes it very difficult for me to see what the actual narrative should be.
John, do you agree with Linus that this administration policy that Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, put into effect recently, where they are separating children from their parents, is that all about deterrence? Is that what it is? Or is there some other, method that...
Sense that what we have going on here is completely different than past issues along the border. And so in the past, Kerry, what you'd see is largely, frankly, a majority of Mexican nationals crossing the border unlawfully, actually going in between the actual ports of entry and then trying to evade capture and make it up into the United States. So what's been going on since 2014 is these Central Americans, what's interesting is they're not trying to evade capture. About half of them are actually walking up to the port of entry, so not even crossing the border, which is a crime to cross the border without inspection, but walking up to the port of entry and when asked to present their passport and visa saying, no, I'm here to claim asylum. The other half are crossing the border unlawfully, but then immediately finding a Border Patrol agent and surrendering and claiming asylum. Mm-hmm. And that is a process that, by law, has existed in the U.S. for decades, but does seem to offend the president. So I think, it's strange that it's so offensive because, the majority of these people are complying with U.S. laws, and it's these are policies that the United States has to be welcoming to people and providing refuge to people going back since the end of World War II. But it certainly seems to offend this administration, and absolutely, I think the idea of separating kids from their parents is designed specifically to prevent them from coming in the first place. Now, just very quickly on that point, Kerry, I will tell you one thing that troubled me when I was at ICE. A lot, and it was a very difficult issue for us, was when parents get separated from their children, it can be very hard to reunite them. What ends up happening is it's a complex system, but the children go into custody of Health and Human Services. Oftentimes they get placed into foster homes. And if the parents get deported without actually being reunited with the child, what can happen is the kid can become the ward of the state, at which point the parent has to appear to regain custody of the child, but because they've been deported, because they're penniless, because they don't have counsel, they don't even know that there's a state court proceeding going on to take away custody, their parental rights. And it's a very difficult situation. And one of the overarching principles in the Obama administration was family unity, to keep families together at all costs. There are certainly going to be times when that's difficult, when you might have a dangerous parent, a parent with violent felony convictions that requires detention. But generally speaking, we were going to make as many allowances as possible while still enforcing our immigration laws, but to keep families together. And so the cost of this approach and the actual deterrent impact, I think the deterrent impact will be minimal and the cost could potentially be significant.
Our discussion about ICE continues here, but I want to let you know about some breaking news out of the U.S. Supreme Court. The court has ruled narrowly for the Colorado baker who refused to make a wedding cake for a same-sex couple who were planning to get married. So the U.S. Supreme Court has found for the baker's refusal to make that cake. And you'll hear more, I'm sure, reporting and analysis of that throughout the day, the court's decision. Let me get a call here from Domingo in Minnesota. Domingo, thanks so much for waiting. I know it's been a while, but it sounds like you have been in the country for some time and have been trying to get your citizenship to no avail so far.
Correct, Terry. And it's been a long road. I've been battling with this for a little bit over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, my wife, she's a citizen, and we have 3 kids that are citizens, and my other 2 kids just come from my country. My wife, she claimed us at the same time. And my waiver was denied by the state attorney or something like that, they said, but it was it has been ugly and really hard.
Domingo, do you feel like you are on a path to getting your citizenship, or you've given up in some ways of getting legal status?
Yes, it's been a little bit crazy because since they denied my waiver, they never put me in deportation or anything like that. They just keep on asking for a lot of more paperwork, and they want me to go out of the country to apply for a visa now.
Okay.
Which my attorney says that I probably be banned for 10 years out of the country.
If I may, because we only have a couple minutes left, I want to come back to Linus on this. Linus, this is the answer often to why don't they do it legally? Why don't they get in line? Because there really is no line, right, per se.
Yes.
And it takes decades to try to get legal status, yes?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question, and there is absolutely a really difficult things that we as a country and to be quite frank, as the world is really dealing with, which is what are and how do we decide who is going to be allowed into the United States and what is that process that going to be going to do so? What I don't think is up for any debate is that it has been broken for a while in many, many different ways and depending on many different perspectives. So the idea is, for a long, long time, we rely on a lot of unskilled labor in this country to do a lot of different things. And we rely on that unskilled labor by using migrant workers. The problem, of course, is that we do not at the same time recognize their ability to come and stay. There has been the Bracero program for a long time. There's been other different programs. And it is, you know, with some irony to note, of course, that it is Trump's own properties that have asked for an extension of specific visas for unskilled workers. Those are minuscule. The number of visas that are actually issued on that are extremely, extremely small compared to the demand that is being used.
Linus, if I may, we have a minute left, and I wanted to give John a chance to weigh in on that, too. John, would you say something about the legal process?
No, Kerry, you hit the nail on the head. So your caller is actually lucky in that he sounds like he's married to a U.S. citizen. The majority of the undocumented immigrants here living in the United States absolutely have no path whatsoever of coming here legally. And even the ones who do, like the caller said, it's going to take him 10 years at least before he can get a green card. And that 10 years is going to be spent outside of the United States, away from his family. So, look, you know, we failed to secure our borders for a long time in this country. That is no longer the case. I think that somebody referenced this earlier. Perhaps there's a moral issue here in the sense that we allowed these people in, but now that they've been here 15 years, what do we do with them? We're not going to, you know, no matter what Trump says and he tells his voters, you know, there is no enforcement solution, Kerry. You just can't enforce your way out of it. I think the sad part, very quickly, and I'll wrap up with this, is that the politics of immigration are terrible. But when I was at DHS, we worked closely with the Senate and passed an immigration reform bill that would address a lot of these issues. It passed with 70 votes, strong Republican support. It never even got an up and down vote in the House.
John, let's continue the discussion. And thank you so much. Super insightful discussion. John Sandweg and Linus Chan.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. to add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.